Entrepreneurs work hard to achieve success. In today's discussion, host Will Roundtree gets to the real story of entrepreneurship. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. You'll hear from entrepreneurs who have gone through the dark side of the process and today are willing to share their insight with you. Welcome to Full-Time CEO, the SHIT they don't tell you. Now, here is your host, Will Roundtree.
Peace, family. Will Roundtree here on the Full-Time CEO podcast, The Shit They Don't Tell You, where we get to speak with entrepreneurs, CEOs, and influential individuals who are doing some incredible things in their industry. And today I'm sitting here with a very special guest. My son is a huge fan of this brand. I'm a huge fan of the brand, and I've been excited ever since I got the nod that he will be joining us today. Now, today, my guest is none other than Scott Fisher, the CEO of Dippin' Dots. That's right. If you've been to a carnival, if you've been to a stadium, if you've just been anywhere where there's people, more than likely Dippin' Dots have been there. Now, Scott Fisher, the CEO of Dippin' Dots LLC, as well as Dippin' Dots Cryogenic. Since acquiring Dippin' Dots from bankruptcy in 2012, Scott has led the company to record growth, including $300 million in retail sales. Man, you're talking about a feat. A lot of people, even just thinking about going through bankruptcy, has been detrimental to them mentally. Scott has been able to take Dippin' Dots out of bankruptcy and built a national, global brand. But more importantly, throughout this international expansion in 12 countries outside of the United States, a successful financier and investment executive. Now, Scott is a serial entrepreneur. He's a philanthropist. But more importantly, he's a ball of fun. So I want to introduce you guys to my special guest today, Scott Fisher of Dippin' Dots. How you doing today, Scott?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here. So I appreciate you having me on and appreciate the opportunity to kind of talk through life and business with you.
No, definitely, man. So, Scott, talk to me and the people. First of all, like, how did you get into entrepreneurship? Where did this knack come from? Did you know as a young child? You know, I remember hearing Jim Rohn once talk about as a child, he was taught to be an entrepreneur. He had two bikes, one to ride and one to rent. So was this something that you knew early on? How did you get led down this path?
For me, I don't really think it was. I don't think I was that driven down that path from a little kid. I think kind of getting out of undergrad, my mind started to change. And then I always had that drive for the hunt, you know, to hunt something, you know, to accomplish something. And then when I got out of my undergrad, when I got into business, I really started to see that drive for hunt go into business, and that became entrepreneurship. For me, it was always hunting for the next deal. Yeah, it kept me kind of motivated, kept me going, having a fellowship of the people around me that also share those same values and drives. That kept me going through the entrepreneurial spirit for the next deal.
Definitely. So talk to me about that hunt. What was that? Was it just a feeling of, was it from a money standpoint? Was it just you were just driven to be successful and great at different things? What was that? What was that feeling like being a hunter?
I mean, money is great. Money's great. Money is always good. It's resources, you know, for other stuff. But for me, it was the hunt, I think, with fellowship, you know, having that thing you're working towards, having that hunt, get that accomplished, getting past that goal line, getting the deal done. It provides adrenaline, you know, provides just a feeling of, you know, it's almost an animal instinct. I've heard there's animal instincts in life. I've heard there's sex. I heard there's self-preservation and social acceptance. You know, none of them are bad, but the sex one goes for the hunt. And from what I've learned from my life coach is that's kind of the driver that makes you go for the next deals, the cotton candy effect. You know, you want more sugar. You want the next deal. You find something, you get it. And then you build on it. I've never looked for a deal or a business that's a really good business. You know, wow. The businesses that are the businesses that aren't good businesses, or they're good businesses, but they may just have the pieces in the wrong places. So you got a good team, good people, good infrastructure, but just pieces of the puzzle in the wrong places. So you can hunt for those, get those pieces, put in the right pieces, and then build it from there.
Right. So you said a couple of things that was interesting. You said the animal instinct. Now, were you great at sales? Because I know, you know, I had a background in sales, which I feel that helped me because, you know, that's where that instinct came from. You know, I got a rush out of talking to someone and getting them to buy something that they had no idea that they were going to buy today. Did you have a sales background? What was that, you know, process like in even getting to that point?
Not really. The sales guys that I have on my team and the CMOs and the VPs of sales, they're really good at what they do. And I'm not. I really don't like talking to people.
Well, you're good at something, clearly, Scott.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So maybe more of puzzles. And I've seen my CMOs, my salespeople. They can talk, you know, for forever. If I would go on a long car ride with someone I really don't feel like talking to, I'll grab one of them, put them in the car, and they'll talk for the whole trip.
Right.
Really, my skill set, but taking pieces of a puzzle, putting them together, and then building off that with a good team is what I kind of fell into, and that part feels good.
Right. Definitely. Now, you also talked about, you know, you like finding companies that are not necessarily great at that time. And then you mentioned putting the pieces of the puzzle together. That's really the embodiment of entrepreneurship to me, because you're undertaking a massive amount of risk. And I think that's the part of entrepreneurship. That's the part of business that people run away from. What is it about project? I'll call it that. What is it about fixing things that made that interesting to you? Because most people run away from those type of things. They want the layup. They want the easy route. They want the business that's already doing 10 million in revenue.
Right. You don't capture value with the layup. You know, if you get a company at its best, you're not going to make that much money because it's already at its best. but if you get the company that's not, that may have a lot of risk, but you see that it just has the pieces that need to be moved around, then you can build value. You take it from nothing to something, then you capture everything from something to nothing, and that becomes your value. That's more equity, more revenue, more cash flow, more business, more opportunities, and then it just grows from there. So I've always looked from that nothing to something.
Wow. So let's fast forward a little bit. What was your first venture that you got into?
It had been real estate, and just creating public-private partnerships. Going through creating an increment above real estate, and then using legislation to capture more dollars within it. We did a deal where bricks and mortar, we captured the sales tax on that. Went to the Division of Commerce, came back in. So had public-private partnerships on real estate, and then came across Dippin' Dots.
Okay. So now on the real estate side and the legislation, was that an immediate success for you?
Did you have to go through a learning curve? Like what was it that you learned or that you were taught during that process?
It was a learning curve. I worked with a lot of really, really good people at their niche on a lot of that process. And so each one of those people, I was able to, kind of pull a little bit of experience from, a little bit of knowledge, and then just kind of gathered it from there. And then it was just kind of working with the communities, working with different governmental authorities, and just pulling stuff together. And then it kind of came together.
Okay. How do you feel about the real estate market now with everything with Zillow and everything that's going on?
I mean, everything's really good right now from a market perspective. I guess geographically kind of depends where people are at. I kind of feel like real estate right now is patient money, you know, unless you're leasing or something like that. And I kind of like to, build something that has like a heavy cash flow and something that has different segments of business that can branch out in and kind of use those puzzle pieces, you know, diversify.
Right. So last question before we jump into Dippin' Dots, you use the term cash flow often. And I often talk about, even when I'm looking at a potential venture or when I'm looking to invest in an asset, my main focus is purchasing cash flow. Can you talk to people why that's important? Because I think a lot of times we do things just out of passion and it doesn't make you any money. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but why is cash flow something that we need to start analyzing when we're looking to make these different investments?
Right. Well, one, I think if there's any debt used in the equation, then it covers debt service. You know, so that has to be kind of part of the mathematical calculation. For me, though, if a company's been around for a bit, and it's really risky going for a company that's been around for less than 3 years. I always kind of have like a mental thought process of a pipeline. And I have like filters in that pipeline. And for businesses, you know, been around for over 3 years, you know, EBITDA of this, you know, show growth of this. And one thing I like about cash flow, you find a company that's been around for longer than 3 years, is that it shows like a historical roadmap of that company. You can tell like when the seasons are good, when the seasons are bad, you know, when something hit the market, what impacted its cash flow. It almost kind of gives you a storybook, you know, illustration of how that company is doing. And that gives you the mathematics to be able to calculate if it's a good deal or not. And in every company, there's a lot of fluid pieces that you can't calculate, you know, commodities, culture, is there a bad culture? You know, are people leaving? But for the parts that you can calculate, cash flow has always provided me a pretty good historical illustration of the company's being, you know, what hurt it, what's good, where are the opportunities. It provides a pretty good illustration.
Definitely. So let's get into Dippin' Dots, man. How was that opportunity presented to you? I mean, this company was in bankruptcy. Like that. I mean, the average person isn't scouring through the bankruptcy sections looking to purchase and acquire and bring companies, you know, back to life. So how did this opportunity get presented to you?
I saw it in the Wall Street Journal. That is scary. I mean, I used 100% debt with Dippin' Dots. And, you know, you buy a company that sells ice cream and it's barely able to keep its lights on. And that's scary shit.
Absolutely.
I remember sitting in this conference room being like, this is scary. You know, my debt service with ice cream. But I saw it in the Wall Street Journal and started talking to the chief restructuring officer in the debtors council. And I was some big brothers, big sisters at that time too. And I had a little brother. I told him, I was like, when you grow up, I said, if you ever look for occupation, be a chief restructuring officer. As he did the business, he sat in a chair for 2 months for the fiduciary duty, get paid $1 million and just go away. And that's the thing with the bankruptcy. I mean, it's like for bankruptcy, I always pictured like you throw a bunch of food on the table, you know, and everyone takes their piece. Everyone's hungry. Everyone's starving. And they take the crumbs here, take the crumbs here, take the crumbs there. And then there's something left. And then that's what you take. And that's what we did. And we're the stalking horse. And under that 361, we can pick and choose which assets we want and then cleanse them free and clear from your liabilities. Right. So before, when it got too heavy, we were able to pick and choose like the brand, the employees, you know, main assets, cleanse them, and then discharge of all the other stuff. And then it started to grow. And then we just moved with the market.
Wow, that's interesting, Scott, because, you know, when I'm going around and I'm teaching people about understanding debt, and you just mentioned you purchased Dippin' Dots utilizing 100% debt. And a lot of people are scared of that word debt. But I often tell them, look, there's a such thing as structured debt and unstructured debt. So I'm assuming you found the structure within that organization to be able to acquire that and leverage the debt to bring it back out of existence. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, I think that's one of the vital things that scares people, even if it's something as simple as acquiring a piece of real estate. From an investment standpoint, I mean, I leverage debt to buy real estate. But as long as the asset, i.e. even the debt, the property, can service the debt and I'm still getting a return on my investment, it makes sense and sense. So can you talk to people about debt servicing and leveraging debt to acquire an asset?
Right. And absolutely. And that was one of the things I first talked to our team about when we acquired Dippin' Dots was that is, you know, it comes down to mathematics. And we had a line of credit along with the purchase of the company. I think it's like around $13 million. But with that, and then I think we had a $2 million line of credit, you know, we could grow from that. And so every dollar that we put into the company, we made sure we knew what the purpose of that dollar was. Mm. And make sure that we measured the performance of that dollar. Then make sure it came out to its outcome. And once it did, then all it does is kind of recirculate through. It covers debt service. It allows you to grow and it has a purpose. So we just made sure that we made sure we measured every dollar. And that's what allowed us to grow from the beginning. And then we started venturing out other segments.
Right. And I think that that's important to know is I often utilize something similar to that is every dollar is an employee. And I'm going to figure out how to maximize every single dollar for it to work for itself, but then figure out how to get a return out of each one of those dollars as well, too. And so, and I think this is the type of dialogue that, you know, I want people to understand because we run away from debt. And I tell people debt is how you make money. If you really think about it, you know, would you agree with that sentiment?
I would. Yeah, the debt service would be in that calculation of measurement. And if it measures out to produce a net and that rolls back into the company, then you're basically just making money, you know, out of there because it's debt. And that was a good analogy. So you do that vice versa. You know, I looked spot an ad agency, and from that one, I looked at every employee needs to produce a dollar, you know, because you're out there and they're on the hunt for business. You know, they have the relationships to bring in business. Everything's based off of their relationships. You may have a little bit of equipment, but most of it's intangible, you know, and there's no contracts. You can't do an EBITDA calculation over 3 or 5 years because it won't be the same EBITDA.
Right.
So you have some person with a relationship making money, then another person relationship making money. And then the girl at the front desk for the guy at the front desk, you know, that's a waste of money. So you know, it's just, you got to think about people. They got to be able to cover their salary. Otherwise you're subsidizing someone's life.
Great analogy.
Vice versa is debt.
Right. Definitely, man. This is what needs to be taught in school. I mean, this is the type of dialogue that.
All right, but they don't teach us in school. This is the type of stuff you learn in the trenches, you know?
Right. And that's why I put this podcast together and why I even started the brand Full-Time CEO, the shit they don't tell you, because this is the shit that they don't tell you. We think, hey, let me just go set up an LLC, get my business license, get some business cards, post some pictures on social media, and I'm in business. It doesn't always work like that.
So as soon as I got into Dippin' Dots and kind of got past that first financing deal and had the construction place, brought everyone to start being accountable for every dollar, measuring every dollar. I reached out to some guy named Graydon Webb, who started Wendy's with Dave Thomas back in the days.
Wow.
And Graydon was one of those guys who doesn't need to work, you know, but just likes to be a consultant because he loves deals and loves talking about deals, loves to hunt. And he had a Rolodex that was so valuable to me because he had all the soldiers, you know, all the good soldiers in his Rolodex from the Wendy's days. And then I threw on business. So I hired him as a consultant just for his Rolodex.
Wow.
And I used his Rolodex and I started doing interviews and I started interviewing like all of the good soldiers from back in those days.
Right.
These soldiers have like all the institutional knowledge. They know their niche. They don't have to work, but they do just because they love the hunt. You know, same thing as me.
Right.
And I started hiring them. So that became my senior management team along with the rest of the senior management team. It became like almost like a Knights of the Round Table. I made sure everyone had a voice, you know, and that way we could communicate. No one had egos, which that's rare in today's corporate environment.
Correct.
And these are all guys that were, you know, 60, 65 and women whose knowledge, wisdom I could just pull from. And wow. And that was valuable to me as a kid, just because I just had a lot of wisdom of a lot of good people around me. There's no egos. And as far as being in the trenches and having soldiers around me, that is what made the business.
Wow. So two part question out of what you just mentioned. One, was debt utilized to cover their consulting costs? Because we talk about debt servicing and having a line of credit, or what, you know, did you have to come out of pocket? Or and two, how important are relationships when building a business?
First one, probably was debt. Our company was doing cash flow, but the line of credit was going into the company, so it probably was debt. But the consulting fee wasn't that heavy. He's doing it more out of trying to help out his friends, you know, get him in a good team. And he kind of want to be a part of the team, you know, and just kind of bring all the players back, you know, the It's kind of the A-team from back in the days, which is nice.
Right.
And the second part, the relationships, the team part, I think that's the make or break it. You know, whether it's in your personal life or business, it's the same thing. You have a great business, you put people around you that, you know, want to try to steal from you, you know, bring you down, you know, play political games, not be there for your best interests, then it's the sustainability of the business is not going to survive. If you have a group around you that has no egos, there's a fellowship, teamwork, those are the ones that thrive. And I saw the same shit in during COVID. You know, I remember like when COVID happened, everyone was like, well, what the fuck's COVID? You know,
right.
You know, is how long is it going to last? That's why the markets went down. And I remember talking to my team and saying, you know, we got the right team for this. And later on in life, history will judge the teams and the companies that make it through.
Wow.
They will know them. And I said, we have the right team for this. Follow my leadership and we'll make it through. And we did. Everyone did what they're supposed to do exactly at the right time, going through COVID. And we pulled together and we came through. We restructured, but we recapitalized a lot by just moving those pieces around. We created new opportunities. We went through COVID and we came out, and with recovery COVID, we just thrived. And it was human nature. You know, you put people in their houses for 1 year, they let them out, they're going to spend money. You know?
Right.
And that's what we've seen that with the recovery of COVID. And this is going to be our best year yet.
Wow.
In 21. And that's been over 30 years of business.
Wow.
And that's recovery of COVID. And it's just human nature. People won't get out. They want to spend shit. You tell them to stay in their house for 1 year, you let them out, they want to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been great for us. Our biggest challenge in 21 was not being able to supply demand. And that's a good problem to have.
Wow.
Are you looking to improve your credit score? Let the professionals at We Management Services help you today. Their team of FICO-certified credit specialists can help you prepare your credit profile for a better tomorrow. Say goodbye to denials, high interest rates, down payments, and the other negative effects of bad credit, and say hello to a healthy financial future. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to start your journey to a better credit score today. Hey, want to gain additional insight into how Will the Credit King Roundtree plays the financial game? Follow him on social media at Mr. Will Roundtree to get daily entrepreneurial, investing, and wealth building tips. Learn how you can get in the best position to make the right plays. Follow at Mr. Will Roundtree across all social media platforms today.
You are listening to the Full-Time CEO, the SHIT they don't tell you, with your host, Will Roundtree. Now, back to the show.
So here's a very important question, Doc. How in the world did you get someone who used to be a part of Wendy's startup? How did you get into I'm assuming that was there social media around back there? Like, how did you get in touch with him?
Right. It was, I think the CMO knew him from back in the days. So we just grabbed lunch, and then he was telling me about all the stories. And that was the best thing that I used to enjoy back in the initial days was bringing him around. Cause he came in and put him on a consulting contract, and the consulting fee wasn't that much. I mean, he wasn't getting rich off of it.
Right.
You know, I could buy him dinner a couple of times, but I loved it when he brought his team or the guys around there now on my team. And we just had, like, you know, probably 6-7 guys, all kind of the same segment of business before. And they just tell stories from, like, the, you know, the old days.
Mm.
And that was always something that I used to love. I loved those stories, you know, business back in the old days, you know, the funny ones, the sad ones, the, you know, really stupid ones.
Right. Right.
It's just really, really good. And he was actually replaced from, he had some franchise, I forgot the name of it, But he started a burger business, made a lot of money, and then hired a really smart CFO who, when he hired him, he said, he's like, someday I want to take over your job. And he said, well, what's your aspirations? And then I went public and one day he took over his job.
Wow.
So his story was, don't buy a smart CFO.
Wow. So I can imagine during just those stories, you've gained a lot of experience and knowledge on what to do and what not to do with your business. Would that be correct?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, I was just a kid when I came into Dippin' Dots, and there was so much wisdom around me. And that was one thing I really learned is you just got to be humble, you know, pull from the wisdom, put the right people around you, and grow from there. And those stories have helped me. You know, there's never a failure in life. There's always something that you can learn from, and learn from something. That's what's important. I remember, if I hear everyone's like failures or everyone's challenges, and that's something to learn from. I remember being with my number two guy, Mark Liebel, and we were driving to, I think it was Newark. We went to Newark and then we went to Jersey for another stalking horse. So if you ever want to do a stalking horse, Jersey's the right place to do it because it's cheap. You like a divorce for $100 or you do a stalking horse for the New York City. But we're on our way over there and the APA was thick and was being challenged. And I told Mark, I was like, you know, it's like every challenge in life, you learn something. You know, you can't account for everything, but you will learn something. Wow. And the judge out of like a, you know, 100 pages, the judge like found something out of like, you know, paragraph 69C1234 and said, you know, I'm not going to award you because of this. And then we rode back for a couple hours. I told Mark, I was like, see, that was a learning experience. We probably spent $50,000 on that, but we'll never make that mistake again on that particular page. And that's what happened. And then we also acquired Crumbs after that, which was a cupcake company.
Oh, wow.
They were doing like around 50 million sales a year and put a guy over it. And after a couple of years, it failed. And we put 10 million into it. And at the end of the day, we just walked away. And I think at a certain point in time, you can't just keep putting money into a company that's not making money. You got to be able to say, okay, this is a situation where I just got to walk away from, you know, cut my losses, be humble. When we did, the president of it, said, I understand you guys probably just want to let me go and I'm really sorry for everything. And I was like, no, man, we just invested $10 million in the education. You're staying with us.
Right.
We put them over a different entity, Doc Popcorn. But yeah, experience is education.
Wow. And it's interesting, Scott, that you say that. So I actually did a TEDx talk back in 2018, and it was called The Power of Fear and The Power of Failure. And it's just that we have such a different realistic of really what failure is. And like you mentioned, it's really just experience, you know,
it's learning.
That's all it is. And it's almost impossible to become successful if you don't experience those things, because you may not have that driving force to say, you know what, I'm never going to go through that shit again,
right.
You know? And so it's so important that we just got to get off the porch.
Right. You know? If you always win, you'll never learn.
Ever.
Never learn. You always win. You'll never get better. You know, it's the failures in life. It's the experience. It's the trenches. It's the challenges. That's what makes you learn. That's what makes a person stronger, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a being, everything else.
Yeah. I remember the last year my son played a sport, like not competitively, but just as a toddler. And I told him, I was like, son, I'm no longer going to let you accept participation trophies. I want you to experience. if you get in last place, you need to feel that, because now he's in the gym. Now he wants to get better. Now he wants to work on his handles. So all of those things are definitely important. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit here, Scott. I read somewhere where, you know, you were able to retain 100% of your employees and keep, you know, over 1,300 of your stores open. Like, that's creating a culture. And I know culture is important to you. You mentioned that a few times. Why was retaining, you know, the people who were there from the beginning, why was that so important to you? Because I know a lot of times when leadership comes in, they restructure everything. And so, but you wanted to retain that original core. Why was that important?
Because I mean, that was the culture of Dippin' Dots, and that the infrastructure, internal infrastructure, Dippin' Dots is one of the one things that I really looked at. And it was so strong. It's more of a family culture instead of a corporation as a family. So you get away from those corporate politics and that type of stuff. And with any business, I think one of the assets you look for is the culture.
Very true.
Because of, like I mentioned before, the mathematics, they always calculate itself out to a net of something. But commodities or culture is a fluid piece. So you find a good culture, one that comes together during the hard times, it's always a strong piece. That way you know if something like COVID does happen, like who in the fuck's crystal ball could have seen COVID coming? No one. I mean it's like it came in on a fucking ship and it's called coronavirus, and they're like, well, what's this? And it turns into COVID and the whole market goes down. Right. No one's crystal ball could have seen that. So that's a fluid piece, but if you have the right culture in place, you can most likely try to weather that storm. So it was the family part of it. A lot of those employees have been there for a lot of years. We've had a lot of employees there that have been over there for over 20, 25 years.
Wow.
It was that family type of culture that I really, really liked. And when I came into it, you just got to talk to the people. It's full transparency, a lot of communication, and just being there for them. And it was great because they are what built us to where we are today. And they're still there and still a family company, and it's just really thrived. So culture to me is a very valuable asset.
Definitely. And it's one of those intangibles that most people don't account for, when it comes to growing a business or even just building anything that, they often talk about championship teams win based off of culture, and that culture component is so important. And so with that being said, so talking about culture and family atmosphere, I would assume leadership is also what helped with that, which is a testament to, your leadership. So let's talk a little bit about, some of those things that, essentially I would assume you've worked on, whether it's leadership, creating that vision. In the book 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell, he talks about, those 21 laws of leadership to help grow any organization. Talk to me a little bit about, those qualities that, that you may have worked on or, that people help pull out of you to help keep that culture together.
Leadership is really important. I think it comes down to your leadership team and the people underneath them. I think a good business always works from the ground up.
Mm.
Sure that they have every voice from the ground up coming up through them to keep them together. And one thing with my senior management team and the leaders around me that I tried to maintain was, even if I was above them, I'd have communication with a couple of people or the senior management team, other people too, but I would never go into their sandbox. I may have the final say, but if there is a leader over their team, I wanted them to be the voice for that team.
Wow.
60% of our business is corporate, 40% is franchise. I want our director of franchising to be the voice of franchising.
Wow.
I'm never going to challenge him in public, never going to challenge him privately. We can talk about stuff, but he needs to be that leader of that group. Otherwise, it's my ego just stepping in, and my ego would just become a liability. So it's just like, it's just having the right leaders in place, managing the business from a whole, moving the pieces around, but letting them be the voice of their group. And that takes away a lot of the politics. Then they know who to speak to. And then it goes down to the bottom line. And when the bottom line feels like they have a voice and a purpose, then that's when you start having a full dynamics of a company that functions well.
Right. So what do you look for when picking your leadership team? Are there certain qualities? Are you going off of energy? What is it? What are some of those dynamics you look for?
Probably depend on what it is over. I would say one, fellowship, being a team player, one that knows they're part of the business, one that wants to participate and grow really comes down to group dynamics. I've seen different parts of it be in different ways. Like with franchising, I mean, you gotta have a strong leader, you know?
Absolutely.
I remember when I got into franchising, it's because it's 40% franchise. So buying Dippin' Dots is 40% franchise. There was the director of franchise at that point in time. He was a preacher, and he was a really good preacher, really good director of franchising, because he spoke really well, was very articulate, really brought people together, but it was unorganized. There's, you know, talks about lawsuits and that type of stuff.
Right.
And then, so when we started interviewing for the new position, because he didn't like his position. So he went off and he's like, well, God called me and told me that, I need to go start a church. And I said, well, shit, I can't go against God. You got to do that.
Did you really say shit, Scott?
Yeah. I think I did. I do that. but he did. So we had to hire a new one, and we went through the evaluation process. And what I was looking for was a Chris Christie type of guy.
Right.
And I got one, and he came in. He turned out to be really, really good. He was one that just like put down the law, you know, but he also had a franchise experience. So he knew the concerns of the franchisees, and he brought it together, and it became a really, really healthy system. And now it's equitable. It feels good. We look after our franchise system, our franchisees. They go out there. They're all franchisees, entrepreneur, you know, they're hungry. They want to get food off the table too.
Definitely.
And so you provide them food, they take food off the table, and then everyone makes money. So it's all about characteristics for the job. Say from, our VP of, HR, he was he also was a preacher, and, he was also a warden of a prison.
Oh, I mean, wow. So
if you look at characteristics for that part of the job, I mean, that's a perfect mathematical equation.
Definitely. So let's take it back just a little bit, because how long did it actually take to bring Dippin' Dot back into a profitability standpoint once you actually acquired it out of bankruptcy?
3 years. But we also had to go back to cash flow. It's all mathematics. So it kind of depends how you look at it. So mathematics, you build your cash flow. Then you acquire more debt, you build more cash flow, acquire more debt, you know? So, I'd probably say three to 4 years. And then, once we got to that point, I said, cause we kept building, I mean, we grew fast, but it was making cash flow, acquiring more debt, you know, go back to the bank, they'd be like, okay, we'll give you this much of a line of credit and this much of a, you know, CapEx line. And we build from there. And then from there, I said, let's diversify. You know, we're in the ice cream business, and there's like certain months of ice cream. You know, we're not in that many enclosed places. We did get in Chuck E. Cheese and a few others. I was like, let's diversify our revenue stream. And I kind of went through this path of diversification. And I was like, we would diversify by 10%. You know, at least that's 10% of our revenue is diversified, risk exposure. Seasonality, everything is diversified by that amount. And so we started going down that path. And I remember I was traveling in China with our VP of international business, who's also over operations. And I said, you know, when you got up to the bankruptcy, how did you guys keep the lights on? And he said that they use their IP to build cryogenic processes for pharmaceutical companies to freeze the ingredients for the drugs. And I was like, wow. I was like, you know, there could be some type of market here.
Right.
So with that, we created a subsidiary. We made like a construction, did a wholly owned subsidiary called Dippin' Dots Cryogenics.
Right.
And I did a press release. And as soon as the press release came out, you know, Dippin' Dots, like, it was like lightning rod with the brand equities, because everyone knows that their kids know it. You grow up being a kid, you know it. And hit the USA Today. And then my friend Titus O'Neill from the WWE, he asked me to speak at an innovation conference. I did that. And then a group called us after that to casually freeze oils to go into meats.
Wow.
So we started doing that and became a strong net to the bottom line. And then with that, it's just like oils, different types of oils go through our process. And we had different IPs and different processes. We put it all together, got an IP on that. And it makes simulated fats, and that goes into the meat. And that became a strong, strong net. You know, I could have never guessed that type of a business venture before.
Right.
You know, you just kind of create the visibility, you throw it out there, and then the business came to us.
Right. So I would assume you guys also do licensing, because I saw some Dippin' Dots flavor protein powder mix. And I was like, I got to try this. I got to try it just because I know I'm going to be interviewing Scott. So, and it was good, by the way. So I just have to let you know.
Yeah, it's funny. We do licensing. And licensing is good because there's no cost to it, really. That's what
right.
money, which is nice. We had, I think our licensing agent was a 50 cents agent for the vitamin water.
Vitamin water. Okay, cool.
Yeah. He's a nerdy guy out of New York City. He's fun. And he's good to have dinner with. But it wasn't what I was expecting when I went to the first meeting. But he's done well. He hunts and he finds good licenses, and it's nice. I mean, it's a bonus. It's free money, kind of just out there to put on the table. So it's been good.
Definitely.
If you struggle with obtaining funding from the big banks, don't give up just yet. The business funding experts at We Management Services have valuable tools for you to put in your toolkit. Their creative funding strategies, flexible guidelines, and exclusive lender partnerships can help you obtain the funding you need to propel your business ventures to new heights. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to learn more about how you can secure up to $250,000 in business funding. 88% of businesses never reach the six-figure mark. 50% of businesses go under before their fifth year. In business, 66% go under within 10 years. Most people aren't taught what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur, the skills required to own and operate a business, or how to grow and scale their business. Don't become a statistic. Rise above these numbers and set yourself up for success by having an experienced business coach in your corner. Ready to break through barriers and get to the next level you've been waiting to reach? Retain Will Roundtree as your personal coach. Specializing in business and real estate coaching, Will has the experience, resources, and network to help you accelerate your growth and maximize your income. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to learn more.
You are listening to the Full-Time CEO. The SHIT They Don't Tell You, with your host, Will Roundtree. Now, back to the show.
So I read somewhere, and I didn't get to see this one, that you were on Undercover Boss. What did you put a wig on? Did you have the big 70s mustache? Like, how did people not know it was you?
I did, man. It was that was a fun process. I think that one got one of the most views. With CBS, it was fun. It was like a one-time experience. So I want to do it again. Makeup artist, like, coming to my hotel room every morning with a cup of coffee, like around 3 a.m., you know, and she'd like start putting the beard on and putting the wig on. And then we'd go out for like a 12-hour day. We got to the parks, and you know, it'd be hot, like Alabama or somewhere else. We get back to the room like around midnight. You know, she had to take everything off. It was long days for a couple of weeks. And I remember one time the hair for those wigs come from India,
right?
And now, so they buy it from India, and they put it into a wig and the beard. So like every time I eat lunch, you know, I get like three or four hairs in my mouth, and so I just didn't eat lunch.
Right.
But it was a fun experience, kind of getting down there and kind of seeing our operations with no one recognizing me and doing that type of stuff. It was cool, and the film team was a lot of fun. So there was a good experience. But the best part was the end. You know, that part's all real. I mean, those tears aren't fake. And those people's lives you change aren't fake either. And that part felt really good. It's almost kind of more of a gift to yourself, you know, because it feels good. And my tears were real. Their tears were real. And a lot of them still messaged me. I had one message me last week. And that's the type of stuff that kind of keeps you going when things get tough.
No, absolutely. Definitely. So what's next for Scott? You know, you've done everything. You've traveled the world. You've, you know, built many different companies and organizations. You're a sole entrepreneur. What is next for Scott?
And that's a good question. And that's kind of been like the next chapter that I've been working on. And I'm not sure yet. I think most likely the business being so good, there's going to be a lot of growth. I think it'll just be another chapter. You know, I'll be a Dippin' Dots and there'll be more opportunity. I think the business will grow. I think I'm going to continue to just kind of keep on going down the path, you know, but looking at deals too, you know, it's that hunger that keeps me going. If I lose that hunger, then I might as well just retire, you know?
Right.
And it's that hunger, that animal instinct that keeps me going. So that's just something I'm holding on to.
Definitely. So you say you're looking at deals. Do people bring opportunities to you?
Every day.
Right. What is that like? Do you get people who want you to listen to their mixtape? Do you get people who want you to buy it to their company? Like, what type of deals are people bringing, Scott?
That's funny. I do get mixtapes. XM. that's what it's like. It's, you know, it could be the mixtapes, could be video or, you know, videos, movies. We got the script or we got this one deal in oil and gas or this new thing we've been working on. It's been selling pretzel. I mean, it's 1,000 deals. So what I've always found to do is just like keep a pipeline for deals and have someone be over that pipeline. That person over the pipeline should not be me, you know, because that's not sustainable. That's just too much shit to deal with.
Right.
And then you get friends, family, everyone comes in, everyone wants a part of the deal. So if I found that it's best to create a pipeline of filters that are mathematical, have someone over the pipeline and just feed it to the pipeline. It comes out, and if it's a good deal, then it's a good deal. If it's not, then let the person over the pipeline say it's not.
Okay. What was your most recent acquisition from a, you know, whether it was a small investment, large, what was something that you recently partnered on?
You acquired? Small would have been restaurants on the personal side. I think for Dippin' Dots, probably would have been Dot Popcorn, which is a popcorn company.
Okay. Yeah, that's like one of the largest retailers now in the popcorn space, right?
Popcorn space, right. And I did that one because they're in the mall, a lot of mall locations.
Yes.
Session Dippin' Dots got weeded through. So used them to have the locations of the malls and did a co-branding with them, or allowed them to co-brand if they wanted to with Dippin' Dots. And what that did was, one, it provided more sales for Dots for us. And then for them, it gave them two lines of revenue streams, you know, one lease payment. And that seemed to help out that system as well.
Definitely.
Everyone makes money. Everyone gets to eat.
Yeah, it's a win-win. So with all that being said, as accomplished as you've been, Scott, you know, what's that one thing on this journey that you wish you would have known back then and something that you would want to be able to kind of pay it forward with for people who are up-and-coming entrepreneurs, people who are looking at acquiring existing companies? What is that one thing you would like to share with people?
Sometimes you become on autopilot, you know, and I think awareness is one thing that I would suggest. With me, with my team, I was lucky to have a good team around me, you know, so I was able to just, you know, have a good team around me, grow business, do the mathematics, and we grew. But awareness is one thing I would say, you know, because when you go really heavy in business, and you're doing long days, you're traveling a lot, business becomes personal. You know, there's never a business trip and not having fun or, you know, it's become personal. It's business and personal. And so everything molds together and sometimes you lose awareness. And I would say that the people around you, your circle, people you allow to be close to you, to have awareness of who's around you, because it goes back to culture.
Right.
If you have the wrong culture, if you have the wrong people around you, it doesn't become sustainable. You have the best business, the wrong people around you, and the business is going to fail.
Definitely. Now, how does Scott relax? You know, is it all business? Are you having fun? I mean, every time I look online, you got the wheels up in the air. So, like, what does Scott do to enjoy his downtime, man?
Man, so like my biggest downfall is not being able to turn my mind off. Mm. I love yoga. You know, it's the constant movement of it. It's the breathing part of it. It's like the meditation piece. That's like the one thing I've found that allows my mind to be still. So I do yoga and then just try to meditate, let my mind be still. And that's worked out really well for me. And it's what brings me the most happiness. And that's one thing I've found in life is important is happiness. Without happiness, I mean, what's the fucking purpose of life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. So, Scott, so, man, we appreciate you stopping by. I know you had an extremely busy schedule and you took a few minutes out of your time to chat with us, my audience. And, man, I so much appreciate you. Like I told you off camera, as long as Dippin' Dots is in business, you at least have myself and my son as a customer, but you'll always have cash flow coming from us.
That sounds like cash flow. I love it.
So I appreciate you, Scott. How can people stay in touch with you? How can they follow, you know, all your new ventures coming up? You know, keep on top with your media, your press releases. Where can they find you at?
My personal cell phone. So I'm joking. Dippin' Dots website's perfect. And all that does filter through to me. So, go to Dippin' Dots, look up our website, and all the information's there.
Okay, and then if someone wants to purchase a franchise, how simple would that process be?
Same thing, the Dippin' Dots website and under franchising, and the franchising website's right there.
Okay, it's literally that simple. So guys, so another episode on Full-Time CEO, the shit they don't tell you, where Scott has broken down a lot of shit they don't tell you about business. And I think I would probably say the most important lesson that he talked about is understanding debt can be of value. Debt is an asset when you know how to actually utilize it. So, Scott, I appreciate you. Full-Time CEO Podcast, the shit they don't tell you. I'll see you on the other side.
Thank you for tuning in to Full-Time CEO, the SHIT they don't tell you. Be sure to join Will Roundtree for another edition soon on the Harlem America Digital Network and the Voice America Variety Channel.